Bible study today is continuing in the book of Revelation in chapter 17. I hope to go through 17 and 18. As you're turning there, you might recall back in September around the first Labor Day weekend, I think it was, I gave a sermon on Mystery Babylon from an article I wrote for LHT and covered some of chapter 17 here and what is Mystery Babylon, a lot of the background to it and so forth. You might, if you want, you can go. I think we probably have it here. Is it in our archives here? In our, do you know? I don't know if it's one that they can pull up if they wanted to listen to it again or not. On our local website, give me a nod, yes or no. Yes, okay. That was the thing to do right there. Yeah, yes. All right. Okay, we think it's there. And all right, that you can listen to it or whatever. But anyhow, let me get into it again, and because we go from that, there will be much more here than what I gave. I was talking at that time specifically about Mystery Babylon, per se, and I will cover or repeat a little bit of that as we go along. But as you will see as we go along through this one today, that it covers more than what was covered in that article, because I was only talking about one specific thing that is here listed in chapter 17. Verse 1, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, come and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters. We'll see in verse 15 that the waters, the Bible explains itself, that the waters represent peoples and nations and all of that. And here is a harlot. And as I mentioned back in September, it's interesting in this particular chapter, the term harlot is used, or the term woman, referring to Babylon the Great. In the Bible, a woman is in many, about all cases when used figuratively, is representing a church, either the true church or a false church. And in the book of Revelation, we have two churches that are mentioned. Chapter 12 is the true church, the one that Jesus Christ established. Chapter 17, this woman has no relationship with the woman in chapter 12. It is absolutely the opposite, as you will see as we read along here. In verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and spiritually speaking, we're not talking about the actual physical act here, but in a spiritual way, by involving themselves with this false religion. Now, there are two Babylons in the Bible. There is the historic Babylon, and we will look at a couple scriptures on it as we go along here today in the Old Testament, both in Isaiah as well as in Jeremiah. And there is the second Babylon that was talked about. One of you, somebody here knows in West Palm, had the question on Zechariah chapter 4, I believe it was, about the Babylon and taking this thing to Babylon. I can't remember because I didn't write that down. But it does talk about more than one Babylon. The one that was destroyed, by the way, the one that was destroyed was a very vibrant Babylon all the way up until the rise of Islam. Babylon was there were more Jews in Babylon at the time of Christ than in Jerusalem. And it was a very vibrant. The fact there was more wealthier Jews by that time, because from the time of the captivity and the end of the Babylonian captivity, the Persian Empire following, then later the Greeks and so on, that many of the generations to follow had prospered and become very well there in that area. Babylon was a city that Saddam Hussein tried to restore the ruins of it. In fact, some of our soldiers in the first war in the early 90s, I remember seeing them on the news. They were showing, here was this young kid, probably 19, 20 years old, whatever, just a private. He was there to stand guard because there had been looters coming in there to take things out of it. And he said, I've never seen anything like this. And they showed a little bit of how he had been restoring it. And, of course, a lot of things were taken out of Babylon by the German archaeologists at the early in the 20th century, and others. Some of the really great ruins, the gate. What is it, Marduk? Is that what it's called? They took that from Babylon. It's in the Berlin Museum in Germany. Still is there today. That was in East Germany until that fell and they became united as one Germany again. A lot of things, and I understand some of the things in the Louvre visit in Paris, as well as in the British Museum. Some of the great archaeological finds from the Middle Eastern countries that were excavated, were taken out and removed. Yet Saddam Hussein was trying to restore the look of Babylon for tourism. I wished that, I'd love to go see it. But you know how the situation is today. I mean, you wouldn't dare want to go in there unless you had a division of troops around you or something because of the danger. It's a shame that, you know, it has to be such a world as it is, but that's the way it is. Going on, verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Now, that's an interesting term, because a lot of what you find in the book of Revelation comes from the Old Testament. Back here in Jeremiah 51, you find this, the wine of her fornication. It's a term that is used. Drunken with her doctrines, drunken with her teachings and followings. In chapter 51, verse 7 of Jeremiah, Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunk. The nations drank her wine, therefore the nations are deranged. Is he just talking about historic Babylon at the time, 600 BC, when Jeremiah lived, when his people, the Jewish people, were taken captive? Or is he talking not only about that, by the way, he is, and the 51st chapter of Jeremiah is a very good chapter to read in conjunction, especially with the 18th chapter that we're going to come to here in Revelation. Because prophecy is dual. In most all cases, it is dual. You find that throughout when you look at prophecy. There is the historic, there is the future to come. And he uses the historic as a prophecy of the future. And you'll see that the terminology is quite apparent between, especially chapter 18, and you see it here at the beginning of chapter 17 in Revelation, going back and comparing it with Jeremiah 51. Another chapter to compare it with is Isaiah 47. Isaiah 47. You'll see the same thing, especially when you get here to chapter 18, and I want to move along so we get there to that point. verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. very interesting here, because again, this is comes from chapter 13 of Revelation, which also comes, by the way, from chapter 7 of Daniel and chapter 2 of Daniel. And those four chapters, Daniel 2 and 7, Revelation 13 and 17, talking about this beast, each one gives more information about the same thing than the previous chapter. And what are we talking about here? The ten horns and seven heads. Where would we find that in the Bible? It's in Daniel chapter 7. There were four great kingdoms that Daniel saw, or that, first of all, Nebuchadnezzar saw, and Daniel was given the interpretation of his dream, right? Daniel chapter 2. In Daniel chapter 7, which we turn to probably most of the time because it's more precise in Daniel chapter 7, you had Babylon, followed, we know historically, by Persia, Medo-Persian Empire, followed by Greece, and followed by Rome. Now, the first three in the book of Daniel are mentioned by name. The fourth one is not. Well, now, why isn't it? Because it hadn't risen yet. The first three Daniel knew of in his lifetime. Rome, By the way, this also is a proof of when Daniel wrote Daniel. You know, the modern critics try to say Daniel wrote, well, that was an unknown Jewish writer of the second century, maybe around the time of the abomination of desolation of the temple, which would have been about 167, 68 B.C. We don't know who his name is, they would say. And that's because, after all, this is too precise. It can't. People who take that position, they don't believe in miracles. And they don't believe in anything. All it is history that was written later by somebody who lived there. One of the reasons, one of the proofs, by the way, Daniel did write Daniel is because of the fact he didn't know who the fourth kingdom was by name. And that would come, you know, the Roman Empire did not become the great Roman Empire until Julius Caesar in 44 B.C., 500 years after Daniel. And that's when it became a great empire. He knew of Greece. He knew of the Medo-Persians. And he writes of them, by the way, in more than just the chapters 2 and 7. He also writes in chapter 11. But and then also the Greek Empire, he was familiar with it. It was rising. The Persians had to defeat who? Not only the Babylonians, but they had to defeat the Greeks. They had to defeat the Lydians, and which were at that time in Asia Minor, to become the great empire they were at their prime. All right, coming back here, in this woman who sits on this scarlet beast that has ten horns and seven heads. In chapter 7 and verses 7-8 of Daniel is where you find the numbers given. At that fourth kingdom would be unlike those before it. It would have 10 kings to follow in that spirit and government. The first three, as we know, were really minor in comparison. They were actually, they did sack Rome in 476 A.D., the Heruli, the Ostrogoths, and what was the other one? I forgot the other one's name here that was used. I'm looking at this chart. By the way, I've given this out twice now when we've had Bible studies on this. It comes from our booklet of 1960 on the book of Revelation, Unveiled at Last. And I look at it because it is absolutely accurate even today, and that's 40, almost 50 years have gone by since this was produced back at that time. All right, let me go along here because these seven heads is what we're going to look at more as we in this chapter. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls and having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. On and on and on. Verse 5, and on her forehead was a name written, Babylon, Mystery Babylon the Great. Look at that, in capital letters. The mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Well, let's cut to the chase. When the Protestant Reformation took place, there was no question. They all understood and believed that the prophecy here was on the Roman Catholic Church. They had a history, which today, of course, is covered up by most people. I have a couple books here, which you may or may not wish to get. You can get them on easiest way is on Amazon.com. The Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop. I took the jacket off years ago. But the Two Babylons is very correct. The Bible's talking about two Babylons. And that much of all of the celebrations and things that were done, I think I told you this, I'll tell you it again. When I was home because I couldn't come to church about 3 weeks ago, it was when Antoine Scalia's funeral was. It was in the big cathedral in Washington, D.C., and everybody who was everybody was there. And it was conducted by his son, a priest, and who had about 100 priests behind him to go along with all the chanting and everything. And then they had the cup and they... with the smoke and all of this going on. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, you know, if Daniel were alive, I bet he would recognize everything going on there. Because its origins go back to that. And there are a number of, I've given you when I spoke on Christmas a couple years ago, I forgot their first names, but their last name, Mr. and Mrs. Counts, who wrote this book, 4,000 Years of Christmas. And you can buy that on Amazon.com. It's in recent 10, 15 years old, something like that. Going back, showing all of the things in the, that we practice today in Christmas had their beginnings in Babylon 4,000 years ago. Now, these people belong to some particular Protestant church, and they think it's fine today, and they were just trying to show how it really did not originate in the Bible, which is true, it didn't, and where it did actually originate from. Well, the same is true. I have another book. That's what Alexander Hislop wrote, tracing many of the things of that religion where it can be found. You try to put Christ into it. You try to put Christianity into it, but it's the same thing that was done in worshiping the gods of the Babylonians and so on. A book I bought here several years ago, Dave Hunt's book, A Woman Rides the Beast, is the title. And again, you can get that on Amazon. In fact, I just checked the other day to make sure it's still out and available. It is. It says right here, The Roman Catholic Church and the Last Days, A Woman Rides the Beast. Here's the beast. I just read the scripture to you. I'm not going to read it all. It's 500 pages, excellent in history, well written. It's a good read. It really is. But let me just a couple of little paragraphs I thought I'd share with you. Under the subtitle, A Woman Who Can't Be Ignored. The woman is a far more enigmatic figure. The leaders of the Reformation were certain that she represented the Roman Catholic Church in general and the Pope in particular. That belief, however, has been rejected lately by most Protestants as provocative and demeaning to a body of fellow Christians with whom evangelicals desire to work together in the task of winning most of the world for Christ before the year 2000, it was written in 94 or 95. In fact, the subject of the woman is generally avoided today as too divisive to discuss. The history of it. That's quite interesting. One other one here I'll just share with you. That goal accomplished, we will turn our attention to Revelation 17 and 18, he says here in the book, and address the question of the identity and future role of the woman riding the beast, confident that the vision will be fulfilled exactly as John reveals it. Very interesting. It's an excellent read, and going down through the last 2,000 years coming to the present, and what would be the future here as well. Now coming back to Revelation 17 and going forward, I won't spend a lot of time on the mystery Babylon the Great because I gave a sermon on that. Verse 6, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. Now, I don't know if they teach in Western Civ class in college anymore. When I was in that class in 1964-5, some of this was taught of the Europe under both the European rulerships at various periods of time and the church. Of the martyrdoms that took place and the number of people that lost their lives because they would not submit to the authority of that church. When you read something here about the martyrdom of the saints, and you will ending at chapter 18 as well, all you have to do is go read history. Now, history is not taught today as to what really did take place. You have revisionism in history. And of course, if there's any church that wants to revise history of the last 2,000 years, it's going to be the Roman Catholic Church. They deny, even to this day, the inquisitions that took place. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu, when he went to visit the Pope, he gave him a present, the book that his father wrote on the Spanish Inquisition. The message was clear. Own up to it. Your church killed my people. That's what it was all about. It's quite interesting that he would do that, and he did that unabashedly. And gave him that book. Cameras are clicking and all that, so the real look on the face could not be shown. I'm sure that the Pope did not appreciate it. Anyhow, coming back here, verse 7. And the angel said to me, "Why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition or destruction. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world," or it should be since the foundation of the world, "when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is." Now, this kind of language a lot of times has baffled people. What is it talking about? Well, if you have 10 horns and 7 heads, that means it's just going to come and go, right? It's not going to be just a continuous all the way through time. And yes, some will be in the past tense, some will be in the present tense, and some, and the one to come, will be in the future tense, as we will see. verse 9, "Here is the mind which has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. If you want a biblical definition of what figuratively the word mountain means in the Bible, it's Jeremiah 52:8. Babylon is that mountain, or government, or kingdom is what it's talking about. Not talking about, you know, a physical mountain out here, but a mountain is used in the Bible as a type of government or kingdom. 7 mountains on which the, by the way, it's interesting, I should make a side note. A lot of the Protestant writers have looked at the 7 hills of near Rome and where the Vatican is, and identify that with it as well. But we have, what it's talking about here specifically, we believe, are the 7 heads of the 4th kingdom. The 4th kingdom has come and gone, but it has risen up. And many times the people that they were crowned as by the Pope as the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, resurrecting that government, that system, and together between church and state, certain individuals were able to rise. One thing on this chart, well, let me read one more, get down to it here, the next verse, I think it is. Verse 10, "There are also 7 kings. 5 have fallen. 1 is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time." Now, John is receiving this from an angel representing Christ on the Isle of Patmos. Christ's angel is giving this to him. So it's the whole, everything he's receiving is future to him, right? But here in verse 10, it's interesting. 5 had not fallen at the time that John wrote that. It's going to be in the future, because it has to do with the 4th kingdom listed by Daniel, which we know historically now as Rome. It fell, and then it's going to rise 5 times. It's going to fall 5 times. This scripture is for the time of the end, is what I'm coming to. It has to be. There's no other way to understand it. One thing I thought was interesting in this chart, and I hadn't seen it before, and I think I mentioned it to you probably when I used it back in September, the 5 that have fallen goes up through Napoleon, because Napoleon's number 5. It starts out with Justinian in 554, who was crowned by the Pope, bringing together the eastern and western half of the Roman Empire to have a unification. And under the authority, not of the eastern, but of the western Pope, or leader at Rome at that time. Number 2, you had Charlemagne. On Christmas Day in 800 AD, he was crowned by the Pope. Put the crown right on the head. There's a crown. Then later on, 962 AD, Otto the Great. And he was, of course, a German. By the way, all of these are of German extraction. It's quite interesting, because I'll show you a scripture later on where it talks about, in the book of Isaiah, really a descendant of the Assyrians, who would be the one that would be the final one. And I'll come to that here. I don't want to get ahead of myself. It's, well, it's not too far, just a couple more verses. And I have it here in my margin. Anyhow, Then following Otto the Great, who was number three, number four was Habsburg. What's his name? should look here maybe quickly here so I could pick it up. Who? Would you say it again? Charles V of the Habsburgs, 1520. That was interesting. What happened in 1517? Martin Luther, right? And Charles V was also Charles the Great, and he was a very ardent Catholic. He was going to take care of that German problem. But he was invaded from the southeast by the Muslims. And so all of his attention had to go to the invasion of his kingdom. Well, obviously, there's the hand of God was in there, and the way that circumstances, it doesn't just time and chance happen like this. And so you had the entire Protestant Reformation take place, not only with Luther, but you had Zwingli, you had Calvin, and others too. And it grew, and there was this great separation from Catholicism. And yet today you see that many of the doctrines of the prominent Protestant churches are the same doctrines in many ways that are taught in the Catholic Church. And they would like to see if they could find some way to come back together in unity. It says that Babylon the Great is the mother of harlots. And we have always, and we have not backed away on that. We do believe that many, who are those harlots? Who are the daughters? Is it just the Protestants? No. How about the Eastern Orthodox? All of those who follow those doctrines that originated and came, really, and follow those practices that came from the first Babylon through the second, certainly would qualify to be, biblically speaking, the daughters. And you will see later here, come out of her, you my people. Come out of her. Now, a great destruction is going to come on that. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll come to that also later. So, Charles V was the fourth. Napoleon in 1805 to 1814 was number five. Now, what's interesting on this chart, if you have it, go home. You didn't bring it, I'm sure, so go home and take a look at it. Because when Napoleon finally fell, ending the fifth, remember the crown? They came to put the crown on his head. Napoleon, a short guy, a young man, he takes the crown out of the Pope's hand and he puts it on his own head. that I thought was kind of a point of humor in history, you might say. But when it ended, we have here an interesting quote from a man named West and page 377 of his book. That means we must have quoted from his book here earlier, and I don't see the title of the book. In 1814, just 1,260 years after the deadly wound was healed, quote, the Holy Roman Empire was dissolved, so closed a government that dated from Augustus Caesar. Now, I think that's a very interesting quote. I hadn't noticed, thought of it in terms of verse 10. Five have fallen. And one is. Now, this verse means that the one is must be, especially we see that by the time of the 20th century, one was, is, at the time. You understand why Mr. Armstrong thought that when he saw Rommel crossing North Africa, that the prophecies of Daniel and the return of Christ was imminent. Because one is. He didn't realize until the war was over. And what did he preach after the war was over? By the way, he preached not only that Germany would rise again and Europe would rise. You can go back. If you look at the latest, yesterday's blog put on there by Mike Bennett, from Mr. Armstrong's article in 1948, Why Russia Will Not Attack the United States. And he boldly explained it at that time. I used that article, by the way, in which was chapter 3 in our Worldwide Church of God booklet, 1980. I think it had the same title, Russia and China Will Not Attack the United States. I used it in a Bible study at Redmond, Oregon, on a Friday night there at the feast this year. He was ahead of his time. And he was absolutely right. Coming back, let me pick up my thought here where I was. Let's go back here to verse 10 again. One is, and we have always taught that from the time of the unification of Italy and the German states until the time of the end of World War II, that you had really the sixth head. Now, Mussolini in Italy claimed to be the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, took that title to himself. The real power, of course, was Hitler and the Germans, as we know. Hitler was born a Catholic. And although he certainly didn't practice or believe in it, he used Darwin's theory of evolution to justify removing the Jewish people and some of the Eastern European cultures as well, survival of the fittest and all of that. Part of that was certainly a lot of his justification that he was using. Coming back here in verse 11, and the beast that was, well, wait a minute, one other thing. Five fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. Number seven, who is also number 10. The first three horns of the 10 horns were very minor. The latter seven of the 10 horns are heads because they are heads. They are major in their time, when they would rise to continue and to revive, resurrect that old system, Roman government system, and to conquer with it. Now, we know that it says here, then we're going to read it in just a moment, that this religious system will be with the final resurrection, the seventh head, in a way such as it has never been before in history. Let's go forward here now, verse 11. And the beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seven and is going to perdition. Now, does that make sense to you? How do you explain that? All right. There were four kingdoms that Daniel saw, right? Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Rome was the one that 10 horns would come out of, or seven heads, right? You count Rome, and then seven heads, and what do you come up with? Eight. The seven heads are the composite of the original kingdom, which was Rome. And let me read it again here to get it right. And the beast that was, because it was overthrown, and is not, is himself also the eighth and is of the seven, specifically the seventh. The seventh is also the eighth. Because if you count the original kingdom, that is the original where it began with Rome. It fell in 476. It would have seven major resurrections or heads. The seventh is the eighth, if you count Rome. If you leave Rome out, well, then you only have seven. But they all came from the Roman Empire, Roman system of government. Verse 12, and the 10 horns which you saw, now here is something brand new, are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Now, we have many times, as you know, over the years, been watching to see if 10 nations will unite in Europe and under some individual who will be a super political individual and also a major religious leader out of Rome. We still believe that. One thing I think we should not, you know, we looked originally back in the 50s, 1957, you had the Treaty of Rome and the beginning of the Economic Union of Europe. Today, how many are in the European Union today? I think, is it 26 or something like that? You know, a large number of many, many smaller nations. But it says for only 1 hour. Now, are we going to see an evolution of that coming together in advance if it's only for 1 hour? It sounds like it's something that comes together very suddenly, very suddenly. And I say that because a lot of times people think, well, I haven't seen it come together in all these years ago. That's right, and I haven't either. Well, I mean, I see the possibilities of it because the European dream has been unity of Europe. But as far as what the Bible describes at the final one, it may not be until something happens. Something brings it together, usually some calamity. Something happens that will be the way that it comes together. Hitler would have been a nobody had it not been for the calamity of Germany in the 20s after the First World War. And that was where he was able to, from that, rise and be able to take advantage of a situation. All right, so we have 10 kings who are going to give their authority, and for a short time, maybe 1 hour. How long is a 1 hour in prophecy? I don't know. Doesn't say, does it? Verse 13, these are of one mind. Verse 14, these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. So, all right, here's the time setting. Time setting is the time of the end when this happens. You don't read about this anywhere else previously in Revelation or previously in the book of Daniel. You read of 10 horns that would follow the 10 resurrections of the Roman, but not with 10 kings at any one of those resurrections, only at the final one. they will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. And for he is Lord of lords, King of kings, and those who are with him are called, they're chosen, and faithful. Who are with him? I believe we will be with him. That if we are faithful and we endure to the end, I know we will be with him. It's talking about you and me right there. Now hold your place here and let's go back to Isaiah 31. And one thing about those heads, every one of them that have come up, they're of a Germanic background. Justinian was an Illyrian. At that point in history, in 554, the Illyrians were German tribes moving north of Greece and Macedonia. You think that Napoleon Bonaparte was a Frenchman? No, he was from the Isle of Corsica. And his family was from Lombard in northern Italy, and they were Germanic. They were German tribes. That's where he descended from. Otto the Great was of the German tribes. Charlemagne was not a Frenchman. He was of the Frankish kingdom or a Germanic tribe. Every one of them had that one thing in common. How about Charles V of the Habsburgs? He was an Austrian. He was also of those that had centuries before had migrated as under the name of Sarmatians into Eastern Europe. Here in chapter 31 of Isaiah, interesting prophecy talking about what we believe is going, you will see at the end of the book of Revelation. Verse 8, Isaiah 31, then Assyria will fall by a sword, not of a man. Really? Well, and a sword not of mankind shall devour him. But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall become forced labor slaves. He shall cross over to his stronghold for fear. His princes shall be afraid of the banner. Are the princes the 10 who give their power to him? The banner is the ensign, it says in the King James Version. It's Christ. And says the Lord, whose fire is in Zion. That's right. And whose furnace is in Jerusalem. What does the last two verses of chapter 19 of Revelation say about the beast and the false prophet? It says there's a furnace in Jerusalem, right? And here it seems to be identifying of what background. Look at there in verse 8 at the beginning. The individual's from. And that seems to indicate here. And I return to that because here in verse 14, coming back again now to Revelation, it says they make war with the Lamb. That's right. They make war with the Lamb when they see the coming of Jesus Christ. And I don't know what they are, they're not thinking. I was going to say, I don't know what they're thinking, but they can't be thinking. And they're going to take on a supernatural force that's going to annihilate them and take the two individuals, the two beasts, that's what the book of Revelation calls them, and throw them into a lake of fire. that will be burning in the Valley of Hinnom, on the southwest corner of the old city of Jerusalem. And we've had articles in the past of I've been to hell. I went to hell, if you understand what the word means there. And I walked in there. There was kids that were, when I walked down the footpath of it, there were some Palestinian kids playing soccer there. And that was the area where at one time even the Jewish people threw their babies off the wall into that area worship of Marduk and other things, Moloch, back in the period of the kings of Judah. And today, or at least it was when we were there, I assume it's probably still that way, it's all grassed over. And you can look up at the old wall as you're walking down. You're going down a hill is what it is. And that may be the place again where this fire is started and will be burning. All right, verse 16, and the 10 horns which you saw on the beast. Hold it, I forgot verse 14, 15. And he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. That's an important verse because it tells us what the waters are at the beginning of this chapter. There in verse 1. And the Bible here interprets itself. Verse 16. And the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. All right, this is a good question, I think, to look at in verse 16. How would these 10 kings turn against the beast? Here they're giving their power for 1 hour, their authority to the beast, to the political beast. Why do they turn against the religious one? I don't know why. It makes you wonder. The beast, there you have 10 legs. If you go back to what Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel chapter 2, eastern and western. 2 legs, 10 toes, right? That's where the 10 begins to come in. I will show you in chapter 18 that it's going to be from the eastern half that this city is going to be destroyed in one day and in 1 hour of one day. Now, there's only one way I know that can happen. And I think you know what that would be as well. But a thought here in verse 16. I don't know what exactly it is or why. It doesn't give us enough information, at least that I can see at this point in time. But for some reason, possibly that eastern half of those 10, for some reason, attack this religious system. And within their borders, I guess. Verse 17, for God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And I mention it will be at the appointed time. Verse 18, and the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Can there be any doubt? What other city could it have been? In 96 A.D., when he was on the Isle of Patmos. There's only one empire that ruled over the world at that time that John saw. And, of course, it remained that way and would, even after it would fall, it would rise again. Verse 18, after these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. Is that really Christ? being referred to as an angel in this case. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a habitation of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. Very descriptive language used here, isn't it? let's just take a moment or two here. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 21 to start with. Many of these things are in the Old Testament. It's the book of Revelation that tells us what it's all about. If you only rely on the Old Testament prophecies, it doesn't tell you where and when or how. But Jesus Christ has given, frankly, to the church the information. I say it that way because the world doesn't understand this. It's like when I was in college at Portland State College, as it was then back in 1964. He was a very good teacher in English composition. And he talked about the book of Revelation. You know, the Bible is a great book that you should read, all of you students, because of its history, if nothing else. Now, when it comes to the book of Revelation, I don't know what happened to John. He lost his mind. See, that's how the world, they don't see it. They don't understand it. But we do understand within the limits that Jesus Christ wants us to understand and gives to us. I say it that way because obviously we don't have all understanding on it yet. But Isaiah 21:9, notice what it says here. And look, here comes a chariot of men with a pair of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the carved images of her gods he has broken to the ground. And Isaiah said this, several hundred years before Babylon did fall. Probably about 300 years before Babylon fell when this was written. This very statement we just read in chapter 18. Now, I want you to notice Isaiah 47 real quickly. Isaiah 47. He has a lot to say about this system. And Isaiah 47, just a few verses here. Let's look at verse 5, for example. The whole chapter is very interesting. It's talking about the same subject as in the book of Revelation. Sit in silence and go into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no longer be called the Lady of Kingdoms. Interesting. verse 8, therefore, hear this now, you who are given to pleasures, who dwell securely, who say in your heart, I am. That's, ever seen that before? Like Moses, who are you? I am. And when Jesus said to them in John 8:58, I am, before Abraham was, I am. And what was their reaction? Pick up the stones and to throw at him. I am, and there is no one else besides me. That's what this church, the eternal. And that's what he's talking about. Not the first Babylon here, he's talking about the one in the future. Verse 9, but these two things shall come to you in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood. And they shall come upon you in their fullness because of the multitude of your sorceries, for the great abundance of your enchantments down through the ages. Now, before I come back to Revelation, let's take a look at Luke 16. Luke 16. Jesus makes a statement here. He said to the Pharisees, verse 15 of Luke 16, he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. And I use that to preface what we read here to finish chapter 18. Because in this world, this system, this religious system, is highly esteemed among the world and men. Highly esteemed. You watched that funeral here a couple weeks ago that I did, watched most of it anyhow. Found it is quite eye-opening to see how much things are esteemed. It is an abomination in the sight of God. That's why these prophecies are here. And notice the reaction as we read on when all that God has prophesied will happen takes place. Verse 3, for all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Well, yes, people have made a lot of money. You play along and both sides do well. And I heard another voice from heaven, verse 4, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, lest you receive of her plague. Come out of her doctrines. come out of her teachings. And people that used to sit beside us in church better look at this very carefully. Come out of her. going back to the doctrines that really originated here. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works. In the cup which she has mixed, mix with her double. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow for the day, for she says in her heart, I sit as a queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. I will live forever. I am the eternal city. Verse 8, therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine. She will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. The kings of the earth, verse 9, who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her, who did well because they were a part of the system, will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. They can see it at a distance, apparently a safe distance, standing at a distance for fear of her torment. Can't get too close to it. Saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. Now, what might that be? I don't know of anything else that could possibly do what is described so, you might say, graphically here in the 18th chapter. And that's why I read Luke 16:15 to you. What is esteemed in the eyes of man is an abomination to God. Some people think, you know, and it's true what Dave Hunt has said, many of your prominent Protestant denominations, they don't want to talk about the history. That's divisive. It's in religious circles, it's kind of the, you know, we do that, we got to follow PC here when it comes to dealing here with this subject. Well, God is going to be plain spoken at the appointed time. Verse 12, merchandise, let me just skip through some of this to save time. Merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and so on, all the things that they were able, it's going to come to nothing. Dropping down here, let's go to verse 15. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, all these beautiful colors. By the way, you ought to take a look at those colors. This was written ahead of its time. And you see them all over there. And adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. And every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance in the Mediterranean and looked. Amazing. And cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like this great city? Let's take a look at let's go ahead, verse 19. They threw dust up on their heads, cried out, weeping, wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she is made desolate. Now notice this. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles, about Paul and Peter, and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. And actually, you could take the prophets all the way back to the first Babylon. Verse 21, then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone, threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. We have a second Babylon here. You know why? You know where the first Babylon's located? You see any sea? No. I see dry land. I see a river, the Euphrates, going through it. So this one's talking about them being in the standing, floating in the sea here and looking and seeing. And so obviously this is a different Babylon than the original. Let me just quickly finish. Verse 22, the sounds of harpists, musicians, flutists, trumpets, and all of those who claimed everything about her. And no craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. And the light of lamps shall not shine in you anymore. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride shall not be heard in you anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth. For by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints, and of all who were slain on the earth. Read Western civilization and history of the last 2,000 years. One last comment I forgot to tell you. Over here in verse 2 of chapter 18, saying Babylon the Great has fallen, has become a habitation of demons and prisons for every foul spirit. Turn the page to chapter 20 and verse 1. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. He cast him into the bottomless pit and shut it up and set a seal on him that he could not get out or leave for that 1,000 years. Is that the location? Is that the place? Something to think about when you read verse 2 of chapter 18. All right, I need to stop. I know it's running a little on the late side, at least since we have the potluck. We'll have a final song and prayer, and see you at lunch.